text 38. Asina, Paryatan, Ashnan, Shayanha, Prapiban, Bruvan, Na, Anusandate, Etani, Govinda, Parirambita, Asina Paryatan Ashnan. Shayana Prapiban Bruvan, Nanu Sandata Etani, Govinda Parirambita, Asina Paryatan Ashnan, Shayana Prapiban Bruvan, Nanu Sandata Etani, Govinda Parirambita. Asina Asina Paryatan Ashnan, Shayana Prapiban Bruvan, Nanu Sandata Etani, Govinda Parirambita. Please chant. Ashnan Ladies, please. Ashnan. Ashina, while sitting, Paryatan, while walking, Ashnan, while eating, Shayanaha, while lying down, Prapiban, while drinking, Bruvan, while talking, Na, not, Anusandate, new, Etani, all these activities, sorry, it's on the next page. Govinda, by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who enlivens the senses, Pariambita, being embraced. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Prahlad Maharaj was always absorbed in thought of Krishna. Thus, being always embraced by the Lord, he did not know how his bodily necessities, such as sitting, walking, eating, lying down, drinking, and talking, were being automatically performed. Please repeat. Prahlad Maharaj was always absorbed in thought of Krishna. Thus, being always embraced by the Lord, he did not know how his bodily necessities, such as sitting, walking, eating, lying down, drinking and talking, were being automatically performed. Purport. A small child, while being cared for by his mother, does not know how the needs of the body for eating, sleeping, lying down, passing water, and evacuating are being fulfilled. He is simply satisfied to be on the lap of his mother. Similarly, Prahlad Maharaj was exactly like a small child, being cared for by Govinda, his divine father and mother. The necessary activities of his body were performed without his knowledge. As a father and mother care for their child, Govinda cared for Prahlad Maharaj, who remained always absorbed in thoughts of Govinda. This is Krishna consciousness. Prahlad Maharaj is the vivid example of perfection in Krishna consciousness. Omagina timirandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshur unmilitam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. Just read the translation again. Prahlad Maharaj was always absorbed in the thought of Krishna, thus being always embraced by the Lord. He did not know how his bodily necessities, such as sitting, walking, eating, lying down, drinking, and talking, were being automatically performed. So now we have come to the point where the demigods have, being in great distress, offered their prayers to the Supreme Lord Vishnu, Lord Vishnu has promised that he will appear in due course of time, that they should not worry. The reason they were worried is because they had been thrown out of their illustrious positions. Hiranyakashipu had taken over the functions of the demigods, and he had made the demigods, in a word, puppets. He ordered them wherever he wanted to. He scolded them and chastised them unjustly whenever he wanted to. He continued to prove to himself that he was the Lord of all he surveyed. And in a sense, at least according to that world that he was dealing with, he was in effect a lord. No one could defeat him. No one could oppose him. And so he went on doing this, but it gave him no real happiness because, as we read, as we have already read, he felt no content. He felt no satisfaction. No satisfaction because there was nothing coming from the heart. He was getting all his satisfaction, which was momentary, brief, just for a few seconds, from his five senses, from his eyes, his ears, his nose, his tongue. And he was, of course, constantly feeling like a lord, because as long as he had people around him to boss, to direct, to dominate, it gave him the full feeling that, yes, no one is greater than me, no one is higher than me, no one is better than me, because just see, who can oppose me? And little did he know that his little five-year-old son would show himself to be more powerful than this demon who had spent so many thousands of years, in the time of the demigods, perfecting this himself in mystic powers, to the extent that he was able to invoke the presence of Lord Brahma because of what he had been doing. Smoke and flames were coming out of his head, and it was actually creating difficulties in all of the different planets. So it was necessary to actually get rid of him eventually. So Lord Brahma, in that attempt, decided to please him and give him what he wanted. And he gave him a whole host of benedictions, such as that he could not be defeated by human beings or by gods or by animals. No one could defeat him indoors. No one could defeat him outdoors, in the air, on the land, and so forth. He tried to lock in his power in such a way that, although Lord Brahma could not grant him immortality, in effect he tried to be immortal by making himself so invincible that nobody could take away his position. After the demigods have left, we are now introduced to Prahlad Maharaj. We have just been learned about his wonderful qualities and how glorious he is. And this, as we know, has been acquired in a very mysterious, if not mystical way, while he was in the womb of his mother. And being in the womb of his mother, who had been under the protection of Narada Muni, his mother was being given instructions on the Vedic teachings, who she is, what her relationship is with God, how to act, how to function, and so forth. And she was pregnant at that time. And so Prahlad Maharaj, being in her womb, he was listening with rapt attention to every word and imbibing it, literally drinking it, and also to such a great degree of concentration that he would be able to remember this, all these wonderful teachings, which would enable him to live in this kingdom with a great sense of detachment from all of the persecution that he was going to receive. As he grew up, we must remember that Prahlad Maharaj was around or was circulating with demoniac children and demoniac elders who were all fans of Hiranyakashipu. They all loved Hiranyakashipu, if you want to call that love. They were frightened of him. That was the extent of their love. Being frightened of him, they would all yes him honor him, glorify him, bow down to him, and echo his philosophy, thus, that I am the supreme. And they would, of course, be always chanting, Jai Hiranyakashipu, Jai Hiranyakashipu. No, you don't chant that. We chant Jai Srila Prabhupada, Jai Lord Sri Vishnu, Jai Sri Krishna. Yes, so they were chanting that, but Prahlad Maharaj, he did not feel comfortable in that environment because he could not chant that knowing what his father was, knowing who he was, and knowing that he was not the supreme. He was not the greatest or the best. He knew who Lord Vishnu was. And at 5 years old, concentrating and chanting the name of Lord Vishnu, he was already experiencing within his heart transcendental bliss and transcendental peace, transcendental strength and freedom and love. He was experiencing all these, I say transcendental, because these were totally unknown to the people around whom he was circulating and whom he was with. So he was a different type of being. He was a transcendental, a spiritual, a divine being, living in a palace where there were demons and demons and demons all around him. That's not an easy thing to do, especially for a little kid. Think of yourself. We have to put ourselves in his position. But he was courageous. He was strong. He was determined. He was resolute. Later on, as we will notice, that he was put into school. And he was given materialistic knowledge. His teachers, Sunda and Amarka, would teach him about what a king or prince is supposed to know, the principles of achieving certain results, such as giving gifts, flattering a person, dividing and conquering to weaken the person whom you're trying to get to do something for you, or just attacking and trying to kill. These are four different ways of achieving, or four principles. They also taught him about dharma, artha, karma, and moksha. Dharma being ethics, moralities, duty, nature. Dharma, artha, the accumulation of wealth, considering that to be all in all. Kama, the stimulation of one's senses through various sense pleasures. They taught him that. And of course, for little children, they did not dwell on liberation, because that's generally taught when you're a little older. They wanted to at least get the basics down. This is their basic training. So Prahlad Maharaj, he did not like this. And he makes it very clear in no uncertain terms. Is that this is not for me. This is for people who want to rule the world. I don't want to rule the world. All I want to do is give pleasure to the Supreme Lord, because that is where real happiness is. This so-called happiness that you want me to achieve, the happiness of the false ego, that you accumulate a certain amount of wealth today. Okay, I'm wealthier today than I was yesterday. So my false ego, like a balloon, it gets a little bigger. And then tomorrow, maybe I get some more gold or silver or diamonds, rubies, I'm wealthier. Or maybe I conquer some territory and I feel bigger, better. My false ego is again larger. And so everyone, especially in the material world, is thinking that the bigger that false ego gets, the bigger I feel because of my mastership or my dominion, my controllership. The more of that I have, the better I am, because people come into this material world, originally from the spiritual world, for no other purpose than to satisfy their desires to be lords, to give up their position as a servant of the Lord, because they want to know what it tastes like. They want to know what it feels like. And out of a certain amount of envy of the Lord, seeing he is getting all the glorification, getting all the honor, all the applause, all the bows, what does it feel like to receive all this? So when that becomes a preoccupation, and one no longer wants to serve God, but wants to be served as a Lord, well, then he's no longer qualified to live in the eternal world, and is literally deposited into the material world. This world is made for such persons who no longer want to serve the Lord. It is, Srila Prabhupada calls it a prison house. And it is a prison house because in a prison, you don't have any freedom. Your life is quite restricted. And people have to fight in order to achieve even the smallest degree of lordship. And once they have that, they have to try to protect it and preserve it and hold it so that someone else doesn't take it away. For example, the champion, we saw the Olympics recently, and certain persons became champions, certain persons broke records. And in the next Olympics, someone else will break those records and there'll be a new champion. And in another 20 or 30 or 40 years, many of those record breakers of today will be all but forgotten. So if that person is still living and he sees that his record has been broken, he feels smaller. He feels crushed. His sense of lordship, his sense of power, his sense of greatness is gone. And what has he got to last him? Nothing but a memory. And even the memories, as one gets older and one begins to become demented, even the memories begin to fade. So you don't have even the memory of your great victory. You can't remember when they put that gold medal or silver medal on you. You don't even remember whether you even got one. It's very tragic. Or a person may have Alzheimer's disease or different kinds of dementia, brain problems. And it's become very common in our world today that people suffer from these disorders and diseases. And there is no cure for them either. They can sometimes enable them to go slower, and not much slower either. So that's in all fields. So whatever lordship one is gaining, whatever dominion one has, whatever proprietorship one develops, it's virtually useless because it's all going to be lost. It's going to be gone. He will have nothing to show except a very sad memory that I don't have it anymore. And then he begins to experience the horrible situation, as Srila Prabhupada mentioned, when his business went down. Even his own family began to neglect him, ignore him, disregard him as being unimportant anymore because he wasn't a big, you know, breadwinner. And at that he realized this was a signal from his spiritual master, a signal from Krishna, that this is pointless to go on like this. Better to serve instead of serve. I'm already old enough, my children are grown up, let me serve the Supreme Lord. So he took to the vanaprastha system, and a little later on, in a dream, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami told him to take sannyas and preach all over the world, as I mentioned to you sometime, write books, and that's exactly what he did. And he was super successful, not a little successful, with 10,000 disciples and literally millions of books in the short span of 11 years. This is absolutely an incredible feat. And by following the order of his spiritual master, following the order of the Supreme Lord, realizing, you know, what was on the wall, the writing, as we say, that was on the wall, he took this very seriously and then became a spiritual master. And we're all here because of his mercy. Srila Prabhupada ki. Yes, we're here because of his mercy, and we should be ever thankful, truly grateful. Because if he had not undertaken to follow the order of his spiritual master, then he would not have come here. And most likely, there would not be this great teaching that he has given us. The Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita, nectar of devotion, nectar of instruction, and the like. So we are very blessed to have this sacrifice that Srila Prabhupada made for us, which allows us to sit rather comfortably and contentedly in this wonderful temple, which he ordered to have made, and which was constructed primarily by different devotees, the marble in the floor and the altars and so forth, and deities. So we are very, very much obliged to Prabhupada. And it's something we should never forget. It's something we should remember as often as possible, along with remembrance of Krishna. When we offer something to Krishna, we should offer it to Srila Prabhupada also. Because through Srila Prabhupada, we got to Krishna. Krishna says, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer and give away, and whatever austerities you perform, please do this as an offering unto me. In this way, you'll be freed from the bondage to work and its auspicious and inauspicious results. With your mind fixed on me in this principle of renunciation, you will be liberated and you'll come to me. So through the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, the mercy of Lord Sri Krishna, we should think of them often, even while we are doing our different activities. I know I forget so often. Fortunately, I have this watch which has the name, the word time on it. I got it as a gift from Time magazine for taking out a subscription about 15 years ago. So it has the word time on it, and it keeps making me remember that Krishna calls himself. He says, time I am. So I'm looking at this and I'm saying, yes, time you are, Krishna, and my time is getting real short. Shorter and shorter day by day. And then, of course, I have the letter K, which is written right under the watch in order to remind me, yes, that I'm here to serve Krishna, to love Krishna, to glorify Krishna, to honor Krishna, and ultimately to enable, by Krishna's grace, others to love Krishna. I have no other purpose in my life. Most, if not all, of my material desires have been removed. There are obviously a few subtle ones hanging around which he hasn't exposed me to yet. I know they must be there. But he covers them up for a while so that certain advancement can take place. And then he shoots them into you and Maya comes and, oh, I thought I was such and such, but I'm not such and such. And thank you, Krishna, for enlightening me and making me aware of this. So here we have Prahlad Maharaj. He is so absorbed, this is called samadhi, what I just read about. In samadhi, a person is so steeped, so absorbed, so involved with Krishna that he can't think, he doesn't want to think of anything else. Why? He enjoys giving Krishna pleasure. That's his only business. He, as we will learn in pages following, he praises the Lord. He honors the Lord. He bows down to the Lord. He recites 9 different kinds of devotional service, such as hearing about the Lord, chanting about the Lord, remembering Krishna, serving his lotus feet, offering prayers to the Lord, doing practical devotional service, such as going out, going book distribution, doing deity service, as it is going on now, cooking for the deities. These are practical services. But he also says that when you do these practical services, try to remember me. Because if you remember me, hopefully you will do them with love and you will not just do them. I want to make it very clear that even if you just do them, that is meritorious. Because very few people in the entire world are doing service for Krishna. Very few. So Krishna, he also mentions among those 9 different forms, friendly association. We should always feel that the Lord is our greatest friend, our greatest well-wisher, our greatest protector. And of course, offering our body, our mind, and our words to the Lord. Krishna says to Arjuna, therefore, Arjuna, you should always think of me in the form of Krishna and at the same time perform your prescribed duties. With your activities dedicated to me and your mind and intelligence fixed on me, you will come to me without a doubt. So he's telling him. Now, it's very difficult to just keep your mind on just Krishna while you're doing other things. And he's not asking to do that. Actually, the mind takes one thing at a time. But it can shift from point to point to point to point very, very rapidly so that we can be thinking of Krishna and thinking of cutting up the vegetables, thinking of Krishna, waving the fan, thinking of Krishna and driving our car to wherever we're going, our Sankirtan spot or our Harinam spot. The point is this, is to not forget Krishna. And that's what Prahlad Maharaj has cultivated. This is not easy. It's very difficult because our tendency is to become involved in material thought or activities. We look around us. Our senses look to this and look to that. Krishna says an intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery, which are due to contact with the material senses. Such pleasures have a beginning and an end, and the wise person does not delight in them. So what does he delight in them? He delights in permanent pleasure. When one receives the mercy of the Lord in the heart, and one feels the intense presence, which Prahlad Maharaj is obviously feeling in great degree, because he's manifesting such in- tremendous fervor, when one begins to experience this, the presence of the Lord, of course it then becomes more easy to remember the Lord, because the presence of the Lord is replete with transcendental bliss and peace and strength. So when one feels transcendental bliss, it's only natural that if I'm focusing my attention on Krishna and I'm offering my words to Him, I'm offering my thoughts to Him, I'm offering my deeds to Him, and He's responding or reciprocating with transcendental bliss, that bliss becomes an impetus to want to serve more and more and more and more. However, I want to make it very clear that that is not the goal of Krishna consciousness, to attain bliss. The goal of Krishna consciousness is to expand Krishna's bliss, to expand Krishna's pleasure, expand Krishna's happiness, if you will. Krishna is always happy. That's his nature. Sat Chit Ananda, transcendental bliss, transcendental peace or eternality, and transcendental knowledge. That's his nature. He can't be anything else. But he appears in this world to have association with his devotees, because his pure devotees, not his conditional devotees, the persons who worship demigods and the like, his pure devotees, they offer to him whatever they have, whatever they do. They give unstintingly, without any desire for any reward, without any desire for any applause, without any desire for honor or distinction or praise or any of this. They don't care for any of that. All they want to do is what? Just serve, serve, and serve more, because there is a bliss, a joy, a happiness, a fulfillment in doing what one has been made to do, which is to serve the Lord. Very interesting in the Nectar of Devotion. Daruka is the charioteer of Lord Krishna. And the charioteer was parked, and Daruka had a fan in his hand, and he was fanning the Lord. And he was fanning with such fervor, with such devotion, with such love, not putting on a big show or anything like that, but he was just feeling in his heart, what a great opportunity, what a great privilege it is, I, among so many zillions of people, get the opportunity to serve the Lord of all lords. He's allowing me. I don't deserve this. Who can deserve this? Yet he's allowing me to do this incredible, wonderful service. I drive him, and I also am fanning him. So, thinking in this devotional manner, he began to experience deeper and deeper and greater devotional bliss. And to this, such an extent that normally when you fan, you go up and down, his hands started to quiver and shake. And at one point, he could not even fan the Lord. So his arm just dropped, and he looked at Krishna and he said, "My dear Lord, you are flooding me with this transcendental bliss. And while I appreciate your kindness, it is preventing me from performing the service that I want to perform for you. So would you please, at least at this time, allow me to perform my service?" Amazing. He was not concerned about, sometimes I see devotees, you know, they're chanting and they're hoping to get that bliss. I want to get that bliss, 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 bliss. You don't have to want it. You don't have to desire that. We have to desire to chant in such a way that Krishna will be pleased with the chanting, because it's fraught with love. It's fraught with devotion. It's fraught with surrender. And when those senses are there, when we are chanting, the Lord is feeling it. And he's being moved by it. And he's being stimulated by it. And he wants to reciprocate to it. And he will do that. It's not something that you desire. It's a byproduct. And Srila Prabhupada mentions, it's a byproduct. You get it as a result. And the result of wanting to serve Krishna purely, sincerely, and deeply. And we have to desire that, though. Because we all are feeling, myself, of course, conclude, if we all have impurities, we all have failings, we all have limitations. So how to serve, how to chant, how to do these things in a way that will please Krishna to the max. So Krishna teaches us from within. He's the super soul. He's living there. He's watching everything we do. And when we beg him, when we cry to him, when we ask him, help, 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 it's an act of humility. It's in effect saying, I don't know how to do it. I'm not so smart. I'm not so glorious as people may make out to be. I'm not anything but a fool, and I don't know how to do it right. Please help me. I need your help. Or one can ask a senior devotee who is experiencing transcendental bliss. The idea of asking is a sign of humility. It means you're willing to risk the fact that someone will know that you're not as great as you might like them to think. And that's a good thing, because the more humble we become, the more we are in tune with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's edict in one should chant the holy name in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street. One should be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and should be ready to offer all respects to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. Why constantly? The same reason Prahlad Maharaj is doing just that. He can't get his mind off the Lord, and as we will see in the next verse, he laughs, he cries, he falls down, he gets up, he rolls around. He's completely saturated with transcendental bliss. And he's not thinking of his bliss, he's thinking of the Lord, who is his idol, ideal, the idol of his eyes, or the apple of his eyes, the one whom he wants to love more and more. And that is his goal, and that, in effect, should be our goal, and we should do this through our service, not just, I see certain sentimentalists when I say, oh, I love the Lord. Well, what do you do for the Lord? What is your service? Well, I don't have to do any service. I just have to love him. What does that mean? Love is proven by the difficulties, the trials, the tribulations, the pressures, the problems, that one is willing to subject himself for the pleasure of the Lord. This is it in a nutshell. This is what our Srila Prabhupada proved. This is what he showed. This is what he wanted us to accomplish. And so on that note, I will end this talk and thank you very much for your listening. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments? None today? Next talk? Thank you so much. Hare Krishna. Oh, you have one question here. Yeah, those of you... go ahead, Prabhu.
The question is, is it possible to be great and to be humble?
Very wonderful question, because it can create a confusion in many persons' mind. Can you be great and humble at the same time? Well, certainly. We have so many wonderful examples of this. We have Arjuna, who's greater than the greatest of the archers. He has so many mystical powers with weapons, and yet he is very, very humble. And we can read in the Bhagavad Gita how he speaks to Krishna. Of course, when they were together, they were like pals, like chums, like buddies. That's a different mood. But when he got down to business of wanting to understand, well, why should I go and fight this? Now I am confused about my duty, and I've lost all composure due to miserly weakness. In this condition, I'm asking you to tell me for certain what is best for me. Now I am a disciple and a soul surrendered to you. So, you can see, and from there on, he takes this position, and when he's shown the universal form, he even apologizes. I treated you as if you were just another guy, although I knew you were divine, but I never even thought about your divine position. All I knew is that we were, you know, we chatted, we joked, we wrestled, we went arch hunting together, and so forth. So he apologized. I called you Yadava, as it, like a person calling him by his last name, you know, like we do in high school and college, they used to call you by your last name. So the point is this, he was very, very humble. And now, Krishna, what he says in Bhagavad Gita, he says, yes, Krishna, he has given us all talents and abilities, and we are encouraged to develop them, but not for our own sense pleasure, for our own mental pleasure, for our own intellectual pleasure. They are for Krishna's pleasure. So if you become a senator, you become a president, or you become head of a corporation, or you become a big music star, or whatever it might be, Krishna says, fine, I'm the one who's giving you these. Don't forget that. Don't forget I'm giving you this. And if you remember that, and you pay your appreciation or your gratitude to me, and don't take any of the praise that may come for it, because after all, when Krishna gets into you and starts to enable you to do amazing things, everyone is going to applaud and honor and glorify you. He's saying, don't let that affect you. Remember who's the real doer, who's helping you accomplish this wonderful fate. And if you remember that, you can be great and humble. Humility is not something more external. It's an internal thing in which you feel your loving relationship to Krishna. You keep your head at his feet, and while you may be big on the outside, you see, and you still you show You show respect to others. You honor others, just as it says in the verse that I just quoted. And on the other hand, you're also great. So you're humble because you don't feel you're the doer. And you're great because Krishna is the doer and he's the real great one. If we remember that, we're saved. Any other questions? No? Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Hare Krishna.